Blog Talk Radio. And what a wonderful set of music by Mr. Bill Protzman, and that's called Anthem. Mr. Protzman's been on our radio show, many radio shows, part of the Brain Injury Radio Network, and he uses music as a form of therapy. And I think it is very therapeutic and very fair to say that it is it's just one more tool that we have in our arsenal to be able to help people. And Mr. Protzman, it is always an honor, and I'm so thankful for you allowing us to use your music as an opening for our show. And folks, get on over to Bill Protzman's website, check it out, listen to some of his music, and buy one of his CDs. It is worth every penny of it. So welcome to another edition of Continue Mission, and I'm your host, James McCormick, and tonight's going to be an interesting show. We're going to be discussing American values, security, and a need to put people with integrity in office that will honor their commitment to the U.S. Constitution. Now, you know, that sounds like a broad topic. It really does. And some people automatically assume that, you know, this is going to be a show that is going to be, you know, placating, you know, one political party or the other. I am of the firm belief that you cannot trade form of badism for another form of badism. You know, socialism, communism, you know, cannot be changed to, fascism. So, you know, we can swing too far one way or swing too far the other. And I think that we have some people in America that have forgotten that the Constitution is a document, you know what I mean, that is intended to not be rewritten, but to be reread. Americans need to reread the Constitution, especially those that like to carry it around and don't always pick it up and open it up and read it. You know, your First Amendment rights end where mine begins. And some folks think that their First Amendment rights means that I can, you know, get up in your face and can cuss you and say all of these things. Obviously, you can if you choose to do that, but I also have some rights, too. And those are rights that, you know, I don't have to be around it. So with that being said, tonight's show is going to be focused on, you know, taking America and putting it back in the position that it should be. Back in the position where it didn't matter what your political affiliation was. You weren't the automatic enemy. We have drawn lines in the sand. It's a very dangerous time for our country. And we need solid leadership, leadership that has the ability, you know, to bring people together. And that's hard to do. That's extremely hard to do in this day and age. Trust me when I say that, you know, over the years as we've had this radio show, you know, we've been through a couple of presidents now. Actually, we're on president number three right now. So, you know, it's hard to believe it. But, yeah, we have been around for quite some time. And, you know, when I think about, you know, how things have changed just in the past 10 years, I would say that the most prevalent changes have occurred in the last 8 years, you know, or even the last 6 years. And some of those changes have been good. Some of those changes have been bad. Now, you can like or not like the political climate, and you may not want to talk about politics. But when we are talking about America, you know, ultimately we have a group of politicians in D.C., you know, the legislative branch of government that, you know, interprets, creates, and sometimes changes laws so that they're supposed to be done so in a way that improves our lives, not complicates them. People ask, you know, well, you know, there are a group of individuals out there that says we should have no laws whatsoever. And I challenge them with saying, you know, if you had no laws, you would have utter chaos. You know, if you had if mankind, so to say, you know, had the ability to live peaceably, one amongst each other, most would be able to do that. However, the truth is that most do not want to do that. And if you don't have rules, and you don't have laws, and you don't have the ability to maintain a level of control, then, you know, you'll have chaos in the streets. You'll have people being shot. You have buildings being burnt down. You'll see riots. You'll see rapes. You'll see plundering and all sorts of nonsense that'll go on that would make living here virtually impossible. If you don't believe me, you can go and visit the Horn of Africa and check out a place like Somalia and tell me what you think about that. Or even in the Middle East, you know, go check out some of those countries, you know. There has to be some control mechanisms. Now, both sides of the political aisle think that they have the answer. The extremes are the ones that I'm concerned with more than anything else. Most of us are somewhat conservative. Now, there are some people that are, you know, socially, you know, they're liberal. And that's okay. When you say liberal, the word liberal has been, you know, turned into this really, really dirty word in some areas. But remember that Jesus Christ himself was viewed as a liberal by some, simply because he was looking out for the poor and the destitute. You know, we're talking about, you know, when he walked the earth, you know, that he, you know, sat down among the people in society that, you know, people were told to turn their nose up to. He wanted to make sure they were fed, wanted to make sure that they were healed. He cared about their children. He cared about, you know, their souls. And I think that we need to have that level. And then that's a level of compassion that should exist on all sides. And if you don't have that, or if you, you know, seriously, and I'm being very serious when I say this, because there are some people with some mental issues. There really are. You know, I know some folks that are very hardcore in their political ambitions. You know, in the Army, we used to call them cheesers. You know what I mean? And there's quite a few of them that are out there. I mean, they follow around and try to get very close, and they'll say and do anything. You know what I mean? Because they're trying to placate. They're trying to, you know, boost somebody's ego, when really what they need to be doing is holding their elected officials accountable, you know, for following our U.S. Constitution, not your interpretation, but the actual true interpretation of the U.S. Constitution. We're going to get Rich and Father Michael on here as well. So it's going to be an interesting conversation tonight. But when I say this, we have to be cognizant of the fact that there are people with mental deficiencies. They really are. They've lost their mind. There are some really crazy people out there, and they do some really crazy things. And they have justified their destructive behavior because they say they think that they are trying to literally save America. You know, they think that they're the ones that's saving America. You know, you're burning down the streets in Portland. You're, you know, assaulting the U.S. Capitol, and you think that that's saving America. And I'm telling you that you're both wrong. You both have mental deficiencies. You're not focusing on what the U.S. Constitution, it was written for all people, black, white. I get it. You know, when it was written, slavery was still in full effect. I get that. I understand that. I've never owned a slave. I've never advocated for racism or bigotry. I've always been an outspoken critic of it. People that know me, especially that served with me in the Army, will tell you that, you know, at a time, you know, even when some people made some openly bigoted commentary, you know, I was very quick to correct that. And the fact is this, okay, we're at a point now that where everybody should be held to their own merit. I don't owe you anything. okay? And that's just the way that it is. Nobody owes me anything. Everything that we get, we have to earn based on our merit, based on our work ethic, you know, our value system. What is your value system? You know, maybe your value system is different than mine. You know, I have a value system based, you know, on things that I learned at home, you know, but not just at home, folks. You know, we had a value system that was based on following our duty, you know, our seven core Army values: loyalty, duty, respect, selfless service, honor, integrity, personal courage. You know, these are things that we really need to be teaching. You know, we don't need to be teaching, you know, bigoted things in school. And I know a lot of people are cheering. That's right. Yeah, we don't need to be teaching about, you know, white supremacy in school, but we also don't need to be teaching that the whole system is inherently racist now either. Okay, because both of those are wrong. We need to be having classes and teaching and people that live by these values of loyalty. Loyalty to what? Loyalty to, you know, loyalty and faith to your country above all things, you know, to God, your family. you know, duty. Wow, there's a lot of people that could really, I mean, the generation of World War II understood duty better than anybody else. I believe that. They came out in scores to serve. Now, at the start of this country, the people that, you know, stood up when we had no standing army, obviously, I think that's the epitome of duty right there, okay? You know, because they really, really could lose and almost did more than one in creating this great country known as the United States of America. But duty, we need to get back to that. What is your duty? You have a duty and a commitment. You know, you have an obligation to do more than just take care of yourself. You know, you've got to be able to do a mission. You know what I mean? To be able to be a productive citizen. That's duty. How about respect? What's happened to respect? I mean, I see people, they just blat off at the mouth on social media, run their mouth. I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable things that I see said, you know. And when you see them out in public, they're like little mice, you know what I mean? So it's like, you know, shut your mouth, you know, learn how to communicate more effectively. When you insult somebody, you're not going to change anything, you know, and that's on all sides. You know what I mean? If you're just going to insult people, you know, eventually that person's going to get tired of it. You know, Mike Pence came out and made some very good commentary today. And whether you like, you know, Mike Pence or not, Mike Pence was a very successful governor in Indiana. I think Mike Pence was a very level-headed and compassionate vice president in a very difficult time. And he's very focused on what? He's very focused on the Constitution and bringing the country together, realizing there are great deep wounds that need to be mended together. So I'm very thankful that if you didn't get a chance to read Mike Pence's commentary, I would encourage you to read it. Selfless service. What happened to that? What's selfless service? Now, believe me, I see a lot of folks being very selfless. You know, some of these social networks that we see or we hear about, you see this selflessness about them. You know, they feed the hungry. They're worried about the people that are, you know, homeless, that are, you know, sleeping, you know, out in the cold. I mean, we have a snowstorm going on in West Virginia right now. You know, there's people sleeping outside in this. And it's tragic. It's so tragic. So people that are selfless are concerned about that. People that are selflessly serving will go out and try to figure out a way to demonstrate compassion, to help their fellow man and woman. You know, to do as Christ said to do, to love thy neighbor as you love yourself. You know, and in America, like it or not, we are a nation that's built on Christian values. That's just a fact. You know, it doesn't mean that we don't respect the Muslim. It doesn't mean that we don't respect the non-believer in this country. Or, you know, we do. It doesn't mean we don't respect, you know, the Jew or the Gentile or anybody else that's out there. What it means is that there are a certain set of values, and selfless service definitely lies within those core values that you can find written in every Bible. You know what I mean? From the Quran to the Holy Bible, to the Torah, you will find it. There is demonstrations and discussions on selfless service. So it shouldn't be anything that's hard to understand or foreign. Honor, you know, doing that which is right, you know, knowing, live up to the values. You know, you must demonstrate an understanding of what is right and take pride in that reputation by living up to our values as Americans honorably. Okay? Set an example for everyone in society. When you live an honorable life, people are watching you. Kids are watching you. You're worried about, you want to know why the kids are the way they are today? Because they don't have enough adults to look up to. And if you're over the age of 20 years old, go look in the mirror. Okay? And you're complaining about the 15-year-old that's out running amok on the street. You know, it takes a village to raise a kid. I'm just going to tell you that right now. And a lot of that is demonstrating these things. And then the big one, integrity, friends, integrity. You know, what happened to the days whenever we could shake a hand and you know, if I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. You know, integrity actually means to do what's right legally and morally. You know, we must act consistently. Consistently, we must have integrity. We must. You have to be able to, when nobody's watching, you're doing the right thing, okay? You know, you see these criminals, especially, you know, pedophiles and all these other things, you know, thieves and stuff, they get caught. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. No, you're sorry you got caught. If you were truly sorry, you would have been able to have stopped yourself before you stepped into that. Now, I'm not slighting someone who steals to feed their family or things like that. I'm not talking about that. But a pedophile, you know, or people with a severe, you know, mental defect, and they must have a mental defect to do such things. But people that do those things, you know, there's no integrity in their life. And I'm not buying it that, well, they didn't have an example. You know, I mean, obviously we have a breakdown in society, you know, with a lot of children growing up without fathers in their home or without really any kind of parental guidance or leadership that's setting an example. You know, some of their examples are really, really poor, you know, sitting around getting high, getting stoned, getting drunk. You know, beating on mom beating on dad. Believe me, it goes both ways now. It's not just men beating on women nowadays. It goes the other way, too. And then the last thing is personal courage. And then I want to bring Rich and Father Michael on here to talk about this. But these are the things, I think if we took these seven core values that we learned in the Army and we put that and made that part of citizenship 101, should include instructing in all seven of these. You know, in the Military Order of the Purple Heart, we have an Americanism class where we teach about Americanism. We teach kids about the U.S. Constitution. And trust me when I say it gets trampled on sometimes. Our efforts get trampled on by organizations that claim that they are assisting us in teaching this, and they don't do anything. They raise all this money and they keep all the money. We never see any of it. None of it goes into these national programs to teach these kids in school. And then we have some schools that don't want you in there. Okay. They don't want our people in there. And why is that? Why would you not want somebody in there teaching a class essentially on civics, you know what I mean, and on the U.S. Constitution? But believe me when I say I've had people that have been turned away and said, no, we don't, we're not going to do that. But they will let somebody come in and teach about critical race theory or about Karl Marx, but not teach about the U.S. Constitution. This is happening with our kids, folks. And I'm not trying to sound some alarm bell, and I don't want, you know, a dozen, or half a dozen people or a million people showing up at an event or a rally someplace, but I just want you to be cognizant of this. Because if it's not being done in the school, really it should be done at home. You, the parent, the parental figure, you should be teaching your kids. My kids understand about, you know, their rights as a citizen. They understand that. They understand what the cost of freedom truly is. They walk in, they see it in our house. You know, I have a picture of a very good friend of mine that was killed in Iraq, and it hangs up on our wall, and his name's Seth DeVorn, and he was killed on February the 3rd of 2004. You know, and a grim day was yesterday, you know, reflecting back to that, you know, 18 years ago. But it still seems like it is here today. Paid the price for freedom. So a lot of folks need to understand that that price is a price that is very, very costly. So I think we got Rich is on here right now. Rich, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
All right, good. And I've got to try to grab Father Michael on here. I think this is his right here. I've got several 757.
757.
Yeah, 757, yeah.
Yeah, one of them's my wife, okay.
Okay, hey, Father Michael, are you on?
I am.
There we go. I picked the right one. That was good. So tonight's, you know, obviously I've kind of set this up in the last 30 minutes, 27 minutes of commentary about we need to discuss American values. We need to really, really go deep into this. And some of the things that I'm talking about, you know, it's not necessarily a conservative Republican or a liberal Democrat you know, view. This isn't, it should be just an American view. We have become so polarized as a nation and violent. We have really, really dropped into a level of violence and chaos in some places that make it almost impossible, you know, to find the common ground anymore. So instead of trying to find common ground, I'm thinking we might just want to start digging for common sense. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, on that note, let me address your comment about the January 6th protesters, all right? Because you just lumped them all into one group, mental defectives.
Yeah.
And that clearly betrays the fact that you have not been paying attention to the tort cases that have come out. All right, and the studies, the vast majority of those people who were there, who entered the Capitol, got caught up in the moment. It turns out that there's a handful of agitators that set this up. Okay, keepers, they're the Oath Keepers, and a couple others have been guilty to this, but the vast majority of them were there. And then once the movement, you know, started, they just got caught up in it. They had no intention of doing anything. They weren't any more mental defect than you and I are, James. Okay. Now the question is, are we able to control our passion? Say again.
And I've got a challenge for that. But go ahead.
All right. The thing is, are you able to control your personal passion,
mm-hmm.
okay, and emotions when things get riled? The vast mm-hmm. majority of the people who entered the Capitol January 6th were trespassing. They didn't bust their way in. Once the doors got open, they walked in. Now, the ones that are breaking in, yeah, they're committing the crime of breaking and entering. But the vast majority of them were just trespassers. And so when you hear Trump talking about pardon, he's talking about, well, he may pardon everybody. That just may be his way. But the thing is, you know, I've read the news reports, and the majority of the people, the worst crime they committed is trespassers, but they've all been labeled as insurrectionists. But you tonight have called them mentally, all of them. You just labeled everybody that entered as mentally defective.
They're weak, Rich. They're mentally weak, so that's a deficiency in my eyes. You're mentally weak, and it's the same thing that happened with the ones that
anybody who gets consumed by their emotions and react emotionally is mm-hmm. mentally weak.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they do. I mean, it's a weakness, and we need to learn to control ourselves a little bit more so that we don't make these silly mistakes and do something that, you know, look, I get real mad about the price of gas. Okay, I do. I get upset because I worked in a program for 10 years, called Vets for Energy, and we worked very hard to get those gas prices down to $1.99 a gallon. Now look at them. Now, that doesn't mean that I can walk up and steal gas. That doesn't mean that I can walk up and tear down the gas station. It means that I've got to figure out a way to use my brain to once again engage another act that is legal and morally acceptable to make a change. Right? I mean, what do you think?
James, but we've listened to you go on rants. Okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about now, this show tonight, you're talking mm-hmm. about how CRT should not be taught in the schools, but when we had the show to the CRT, you and I got mm-hmm. in a heated argument over the fact you thought it should be taught in the schools.
I thought that here's what I think about CRT. I think that it should be up to the parents. Okay, just like I told you in that show that time, and it should also be something that, like you said, it's a class in college. You know, that's debated. What I believe is that the more that I've learned about it, and the more that I see some are trying to use it in an obscene way to paint a picture that everyone is inherently racist that is not a person of color,
that creates
problems.
That's the smartest thing I've heard you say tonight, okay? See, you've evolved. You started from a premise that CRT should be taught, and the more you've learned about it, you realize that it shouldn't be taught in the public schools. It should be left as a theory to be taught in the colleges.
Here's the thing, Rich, is that if you totally shut the door on it, then you don't get a chance to see it for what it really is. You see what I'm saying? So all of these people are saying, I don't want to hear anything about it. Okay, well, then you won't fully understand it. And, you know, Sun Tzu was a great tactician, you know, and you understand. You've all read The Art of War. You know, we have to really study everything and understand it so you can make a conscious decision whether or not you're going to attack, retreat, or, you know, stand your ground, per se. And I think that when we look at the history, I mean, we're history guys, you know, we study history. Obviously there were problems, you know, there was slavery in America. We're not denying that, but I've never owned a slave. You've never owned a slave. I don't know anybody alive today that's ever owned a slave, in America anyway. but there are plenty of countries that still have slavery. And if we're truly, truly interested in dealing with what we can address now, then that's what we need to be addressing, is the slavery that's occurring around the world.
James, slavery does exist in the United States. There is human trafficking that is
absolutely
a new form of slavery in this country.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I took a class on that just recently, on human trafficking, and it is a tragedy.
Could we go back to some of the basic stuff that James pointed out? I took a good number of notes. You talked about, you know, rereading the Constitution and American leadership that is selfless, how necessary that is. And you talked about many, many different values. But, you know, we have to think about small unit integrity. You know, in the Army, you know, if the squad's a mess and the platoon's a mess and the company's a mess, the battalion's going to be a mess and the brigade's going to be a mess and the regiment's going to be a mess and the division's going to be a mess. It's the same thing with the individual, the family, the extended family, the community, the state, the region. It used to be you were a state senator or a mayor or a superintendent of school. You proved yourself. And I think that, you know, we're looking for people perform ethically.
No,
you talked about compassion and merit, honor, values, being an example, being consistent. But if you haven't done it on a smaller level, I mean, if you see a specialist that is not doing their job, they're not epitomizing leadership,
mm-hmm.
are you just going to put them in leadership because they have enough time in? And I think we have to look at what it means to build the individual. I always told my children, I want you in church, I want you in the library, and I want you in the gym. Too many of us are one-dimensional, either all spiritual or all intellectual or all physical. We can't be one-dimensional and deal with these problems. Now, we hear, not teach critical thinking. We look at the problems all around us, and people get up and they give the same answers, unproven answers to say, and nothing ever changes. I remember the Detroit and the Newark riots. I'm a little bit older than Rich. I'm a little bit older than you. And it's like we keep on doing the same thing and expecting different results. We've got to build the individual so that the individual, just like the individual soldier that goes to basic training, then we teach them how to build a squad and a strong platoon. If we don't do that, that internal integrity, there cannot be any external integration. You know, if your family's a mess, you're not going to meet with a lot of other families or be part of a church community. There has to be internal integrity before there can be external integration.
Right. No, I would agree with that. And I know. So when we look at, and, you know, like Rich said, you know, look, I don't think all the people are mentally deficient, but I do think that, that those that allow themselves, you know, to be driven by these emotional impulses to do, you know, some of the chaos that we saw in Portland and in Kenosha and, you know, even our nation's capital, you know, I do see that as a weakness. And part of the reason why that we as a society are running into the things that we're running into now. Now, whether it be something that they missed at home, you know, those are small units that used, like you said, that broke down. And this is what we have is a nation that is just absolutely, you know, fighting against each other. But I believe, maybe I'm a dreamer, but I believe that both of those sides that pulled that junk only represent a very, very, very small group of America. I don't think that either of those sides are as strong as they claim to be. What's your thought on that?
You know, you said about people being weak-willed, that I agree with you. Even the Apostle Paul, they talked about all these people that got together. They were in a hysteria. And it says in Scripture, some of them didn't even know why they were there. They were just caught up on it, like what Rich said earlier. And I think you can be weak-willed. You know, I studied for my course on propaganda. Adolf Hitler never debated anyone intellectually. It was all pathos, all emotion. It wasn't logos, wasn't logic. And I think people do get caught up. You know, we have too many followers and not enough leaders. I would tell young people that. You know, we had a Christian school, K through 12, and when I had to talk to someone, I was like the acting principal, and I would say to them, be a leader, stop being a follower. Just because, some, you know, I think there's where the weakness in our character is. We can't stand alone and say, no, I'm not doing that because everybody else is.
So
there's where your character and your training comes in.
Those are, you know, those two groups that you just mentioned, pathos and logos. That's what you said, right? Can you explain that? I mean, I understand. I've heard that before. You know, one reacts on emotion, one reacts on logic. But for the benefit of all of us and the audience here, we have a great opportunity for you to kind of teach us about those two different styles there. And where did that come from? Where did those terms come from?
You have this emotional, it's Nietzschean in that it tries to impose its will on another. It's all about emotion, and it's some of the things through. Now, we should have conviction. There should be moral outrage, but you don't lose your mind in the process. You still have to think through your actions. Now, when we do syllogisms and things of that nature, because critical thinking is as much a science as it is an art, if it's not logical, if the premises are not logical, then you can't come to a logical conclusion. And people don't know how to argue, don't know how to use logic. It's all about passion and emotions and anger. And you said before, you know, the vitriol and the polarized violence. You know, and Rich knows better, when you're fighting and you're angry, it clouds your judgment. I was teasing my wife the other day. We were watching the UFC. I called three fights in a row. As soon as they came on, it didn't start or anything. I sized them up, this and that. This was great, but you can always tell that if someone's full of emotion, They're blurred in their judgment, and we just have gotten hyped up about things, and we can't think logically. And it's that's why we in the public square we don't have real civility. We're a civilization. You know, one of the rules from the book I teach, the authors say, at least be civil. Really? We have to tell people today, and this is a brand new book, maybe a couple years old, we have to tell people, at least be civil. Like, no one can talk to each other. They don't listen. You know, they're not informed about the other person's position. And it's all emotion. And I said from Nietzsche, it's an imposition of the will. I'm going to bully you. You know, I had a conversation the other day with someone for a long time, and I was forewarned. They like to bully. I was ready, you know, as far as, you know, that was concerned. I wasn't going to let the person, but that is not a good tactic. That is not a good strategy. And that's what we have. People have not thought things through. They've overheard things. We read an article on BS. It's from Harry Frankfurt. He's a retired professor from Princeton University. When I first looked at it, I said, oh, this is foolishness. And I'm telling you, He talks about people who have no regard for the truth, those who disregard the truth all together. He talks about St. Augustine and his whole concept of lying and so on and so forth. And I try to bring the students to a place where there is such a thing as the truth. And I just think that we've gotten so hyped up and people, you know, start getting others hyped up and they're not thinking. And then when you look at the aftermath and the billions of dollars, and I hear people actually logically believe that most of the rioting in 2020 summer was peaceful. So how do you rack up billions of dollars of damage if it's peaceful? That's illogical. And so that's the difference. You know, if we're going to be thinking people and we're going to talk about situations because we have facts, we can have empirical data, and we can understand a logical argument. You know, people think critical thinking is being critical. Argumentation is not just because you can argue with someone. That's not argument. That's not classical argument. I tell my students, you could write about anything, whether I agree with it or not. But if you don't argue well, you don't get a good grade. And you could tell me, you know, God is great because I know I'm a priest. And you can do all that kind of stuff. But Wittgenstein, a great philosopher from Cambridge, said, if you don't have counter arguments, and I've seen this with a lot of students, you know, it's like, don't confuse me with the facts, I've got my mind made up. But he said it's like being in a ring as a boxer with no opponents. And, you know, some people have one side, they don't understand the other side. And we've had, I think, some very respectful debates and dialogues on this radio program. We've listened to people and so on and so forth. But the majority of what's going on today, James, is people are trying to impose, not propose. And even with evangelism, we don't impose. You know, people used to use the verse, compel them to come in, you know, by the sword. That's been done historically by some. But we don't impose, we propose.
Yeah. Interestingly, we've got a caller that's in here, so I'm going to bring him on the air here. He had some comments that he wanted to make. Buzzy, you're on the air, man.
Oh, thank you, God. Thank you. How are you guys?
Good.
Good.
Well, that's good to hear. I mean, I'm, you know, we've seen what's going on with this, what, not only this country, but this world, and I think that's what we should be more concentrating on is the world. Me as a political, I wouldn't call myself a pundit. I consider myself a bit of a jerk. I get involved in American politics very heavily, but I enjoy seeing, you know, the change globally. So when I see Canada doing things and people in the Middle East fighting for their freedoms, I get excited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's good for people to fight for their own rights and to, you know, and to read, you know, in particular, it just seems obscene to me anyways that we can go into a country, we can maintain control for nearly 20 years, and we leave, and within a matter of days, you know, the government folds. You know, there's a lot of
bad
with
that. Do you blame that on their not being able to do it or are leaving?
You know, it's a little bit of both. I'll tell you that, of course, I am a strong advocate against the way that we left Afghanistan. It was very damaging, very destructive, very upsetting, you know,
if you don't mind me saying this, I'm just making this joke up right now when I say it, but I'm saying we left a model factory and took the glue with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And
I just,
you know,
made that up right now.
Well, you know, and that's a good thing to say, but how that went down, you know, a lot of really good people to this day are still left there. So, I mean, you know, I think that was a a real critical point in America's, you know, how we treat our allies. And of course, this is not something foreign. This has occurred before. You know, it occurred, you know, in the Vietnam War, and you know, you had the same type of leadership. Everybody's like, "Wow, let's just get out of there. Let's just get away." And you know, what happens is that it folds, and when it folds hard. So yes, we could have done that a whole lot better. A retreat is a military operation that is supposed to be done in an orderly fashion, and that was, you know, very chaotic and not because
James,
of the military members.
Operation.
Yeah, retrograde.
We've left a lot of areas in their own hells, if I may say. Maybe I'm wrong about it, but I see what we left Vietnam with was not, did not help them. We tried to pretend we won the war. That was fine. But when we left, they still were getting attacked. We didn't do anything for them.
Well, hold it. If you're going to talk about the
please.
Vietnam War, we actually had a peace treaty signed by the North Vietnamese that they would not interfere with it. We had beaten them to the point where they signed a peace treaty. That's a victory. The problem is Vietnam did not by insurgents. It fell by an invasion, tanks driving down from North Vietnam.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. We made a good deal. I thought it was a pleasant deal. I mean, I wasn't born at the time, but hell, it was a pleasant deal. And they ended up getting, pardon my French, but a little screwed over.
Yeah, because we had lost moral integrity to back the country. I mean, all we had to do is supply them the ammunition. Okay, we completely cut them off and left them to dry, hanging out.
Absolutely.
Okay? Yeah,
absolutely.
So anyway,
I think it was a bad deal.
When you talk about, you know, having lost more. No, we won that one. It's just we bailed out on them, and the North Vietnamese knew we were not going to defend, help it, okay? Mm-hmm. But there were some good divisions that literally ran out of ammo, artillery. Mm-hmm. And if you go back to the anybody listening about it, the 1972 Easter Offensive.
I was there.
You know, when they came across the tanks, that's when they were vulnerable. And we just bombed.
Well,
our air power to just destroy the North Vietnamese Army.
That's right.
So anyway,
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Buzzy.
But even with Afghanistan, gentlemen, I just want to say, and because I'm a Vietnam vet and I was a part of that in 72 in the Navy and with the Marines, trained the Afghanistan soldiers. Okay, we have to think about that, too. You say it fell apart in 2-3 days. Something's awry. And I'm not making critical. My son was there with the Special Forces and Navy SEALs. I'm not criticizing, but we were there to train them.
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. My nephew trained
to
them
say that we did
for
nothing, but even in Vietnam, you know, after 58,000 deaths, you know, I don't know if we can just make that declaration.
Well, and I don't think that was his intent.
We walked away without giving them the proper, no matter how much you trained them, they weren't ready because clearly it didn't work.
Yeah. So.
No,
so let me ask.
I'm 100% a military guy. I respect the United States government, the military, and the peace we've kept across this world for, holy hell, God, you know, run around 100 years now. Yeah. We've been keeping the peace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you and I talked earlier, Buzzy, you had mentioned something about your view of what the truckers are doing up in Canada and some of the, I'd be interested in hearing your views on that.
Well, I believe that, you know, I'm really surprised, truly surprised that the Canadians are actually showing their testicle fortitude more than the American man. They're doing real good work up there in Canada. And that's one of the reasons why I want to talk to Jim Justice a little more. I spoke to him recently, governor of, you know, West Virginia.
Uh-huh.
He should have a convoy coming through West Virginia because it'll hit right to the northeast, and it'll hit them before the politicians even know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's, you know, there has been a discussion on that, and a lot of that's rested on, you know, the restrictions and you know, people, you know, obviously we all have our beliefs and nobody wants to get sick. And I think that there's ways to prevent that without, you know, locking everybody up in their houses. You know, we're taught from a young age to wash your hands, you know, don't share, you know, things. And, you know, and if you choose to wear a mask, then God bless you. If you don't want to wear a mask and you've got a good immune system, then God bless
Absolutely.
You.
Your own right.
Yeah. And I've gotten to this point with this whole thing where, I had nasal surgery, you know, not too long ago. And I mean, I was pretty vulnerable, you know, so I wore a mask and, you know, and I have a, you know, a 90-pound German Shepherd service dog, and we walk around and you know, and most people don't say anything, you know, I mean, but you know, I had a guy walk up and just said, you know, that mask is not going to help
German Shepherd, pal. I'm not going to say anything to you either. You've got a 90-pound German Shepherd.
Well, this guy did. He walked up and he said,
never mind.
Yeah, he says, you know, that mask is not going to help you. And it's like, well, you know, it's not just for that. It's because, you know, when I pull my mask back and I've got two great big, you know, looks like tampons shoved up my nose and they're full of blood, I think you probably don't want to see that. So, so, you know, not everybody wears a mask because they're afraid. They wear it because maybe they're sick or maybe they're taking care of somebody that has cancer.
And they should be able to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Unhinged.
I have no issues with that. I'm a libertarian. I'm one of the few actual libertarians.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do that right or left. I'm a constitutionalist capitalist.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the Constitution. I really like it. I thought it was written very well.
Mm-hmm.
That's my rules. Those are the rules,
yeah.
I abide by. If you don't like it, I'm sorry that you're not an American, but you're not. That's our rules. That's how we live our lives. Boom.
Well,
so
then,
if you get mad at me because I have a gun with no permit, pistol permit or rights to that, I'm sorry, but I'm just following the rules.
Yeah, and you know, for me, everyone. You know, look, I mean, I carry a pistol with me everywhere I go. I carry, you know, I'm constantly out and about and moving.
So you're a libertarian.
I'm registered as an independent.
Nah, James is paranoid.
I'm not paranoid.
Well, who told you you're allowed to have that weapon?
The United States Constitution.
Oh, so you're
told
a
libertarian. You know, some people say that. I mean, some people have told me that. Maybe that is, you know, I'm all about leaving people alone and letting them make their own decisions. You know, I really am.
You sound like 99% of libertarians.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is I do believe that there are certain laws in place that need to be there because there are people that are incapable. You know, I mean, look, we're going to have people that are going to, well, I mean, like, don't murder nobody. Don't steal from people.
Well, that's
rape
as a libertarian. As a libertarian, it's very easy because we have a non-aggression policy.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe in laws. And I do have actual what you would call liberal beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Very few. Yeah, mm-hmm. we should all work together and make a better country. I mean, but I do believe that we should be following the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think anybody disagrees with that.
You're not allowed to shoot somebody with your gun. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, only if
you're allowed to own
kill
a gun, but don't take a man's life. That would be rude.
Yeah.
No. Wait, no. You shouldn't take a person's life unless they deserve killing.
All right. Well, that's why I said rude. I said rude originally. All right. How about this? I'll say this. I'll go. That would be unfortunate.
Very unfortunate.
I grew up in the shadow of the old West, and it's like,
I grew up with an old school father who taught me very well. You don't take anything from anybody, whether it be their dollar or their life. You don't take it. It's not yours.
Yeah.
That's it. Pretty simple. Yeah. Be nice to your neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, and that's, those are all great values, and most people, I believe, can do that. But there are some that just do not. I mean, there are people that just have the propensity for chaos and violence. And
is it what they call Christian right for me to say that I'm starting to say that I believe that most people don't have these values because they didn't grow up with Christianity.
Yeah,
and
well,
I
no,
get
it's
called a hate monger for that.
No, I don't. Look, we are a nation with Christian values. It doesn't mean that we don't respect other people's beliefs.
Actually,
but you're right. We should have
Christian values. I'm going to disagree with you right there.
We're not supposed to be a Christian country, but we came from a country of Christian values.
No.
Our God's on the dollar.
Guys, I want to tell you something. Father Michael and I went to school. The Lord's Prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance. And then they took it out. All right.
Exactly. I grew up with the Pledge
now,
of Allegiance.
starting Monday, I'm going to be suffering. Because of coronavirus, there is a desperate shortage of substitute teachers. And I've done that before. I'm retired. I love sleeping in late. I'm going to early to go sub next week, and I'll probably be subbing for 2 weeks. And when I wrote a friend about that, he goes, "You couldn't pay me enough." And he knew the lack of discipline schools. And I said, "No, I'm subbing in a Christian school. I'm subbing in a Christian school. There are moral values. I broke up fights in the public school. You know, there's 23 kids per class when I was teaching in the public school. Three of them didn't need to be there. We spent more time dealing with the three kids.
How many years did you teach public?
And they were pulling everybody else down. Go ahead.
How many years did you teach?
Just three semesters. Actually, I taught three semesters as a sub, two semesters, and there was so much. There's so many fights in schools. I'm like, this I got to get out of this. Okay?
Well, you did your thing. You know what? For you, can we do the Pledge of Allegiance right now?
Go ahead.
I'm going to start.
Absolutely.
Right, hold on. Everybody look up to your left.
If you go to Pledge of Allegiance, explain what the meaning of that is and why that's valuable.
Why is it powerful? Because we were being approached by the British. They were basically telling us how you should be part of us instead of them, and those men stood by the United States of America.
See, this show, James. So why is it important to do the Pledge of Allegiance, which has been taken out of the schools?
It needs to be brought back.
Do the Pledge of Allegiance, and then tell us what the meaning of that is.
Let's go for it. We got about 130,000.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic of which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. There you go.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Greatest
and,
thing
and, you
ever,
know,
every day I was taught that, and that's how I learned to trust the United States, talk to the people, especially the armed forces, and I learned it.
I learned love for this country because of that.
You know,
not until President Eisenhower, because I was born January 54, was the phrase "under God" inserted. Mm-hmm. If you ever see any older movies, when they say the Pledge of Allegiance, if they're a movie from the 40s, you'll notice that phrase is not there.
That's true. Why Eisenhower is my second favorite president.
Yeah. Who's your first favorite president?
Roosevelt.
Are you talking about Franklin or Teddy?
Teddy's a beast.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say,
Teddy's the greatest guy that ever existed in this country. My dad taught me about him. I've been in the American Legion when I was 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I sat there and I talked to like real veterans, like 85-year-old veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Like I literally talked to guys that were in World War One.
Mm-hmm.
These are great men. And
yeah,
I said, I like Teddy. I'm a Teddy guy.
So, Rich, it's interesting that you bring that up because Rich Kilblain is also a writer.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of study about that.
Yeah, my next book is about Teddy Roosevelt.
Yes, I was going to mention that.
As the commander of the Rough Riders. All right, but the book is really about the man who served on their position. But I want to tell you something. Teddy Roosevelt was not supposed to become a president because his values were so strong. It is like an accident or divine intervention that guy become a president because
Absolutely. He
goes down. He was the undersecretary of the Navy when the Spanish-American War broke out, resigned his position to become the second in command of the Rough Riders. They offered him command of the 1st U.S. Volunteer Cavalry, but he knew he did not have the expertise, so he turns to his friend Captain Leonard Wood, and he knew he could learn, and Wood was a great tutor. They were really good friends, both Harvard, Yale guys, and they go down there, gets promoted to the brigade commander in time for Roosevelt to command the Rough Riders charging up the hill. All right, here's the deal. When he comes back, he's a hero. So I can't remember. You know, there's always some gate. So there's some politician. Like it was the same thing in New York politics. It was some senator who controlled New York politics, and everybody knew Roosevelt was a wild card. Okay, so when this guy finally gives Roosevelt his blessing. You know, because everybody's talking about him running for governor. So he went. But they remember what he was, the police commissioner. He was actually cleaning up the police force. They couldn't handle that. He was an honest politician, so they had to get rid of him. So anyway, he becomes the governor in New York. He's the governor. Well, the problem is he can't leave control, so they got to get rid of him. So guess what they do? They have him run as vice president. Vice presidents are the most inept people. They don't do anything except monitor the heartbeat of the president. But so Roosevelt becomes they make him the vice president of the United States to get him out of being the governor of New York by accident or whatever.
I love these things.
Roosevelt becomes the president. And that is where we get this. That's why he is on Mount Rushmore, because this guy was not. He did not compromise.
He's the greatest president. I'm going to say maybe the greatest American of all time.
Tell you how he got to be president. I want to hear your opinion of why he's the greatest president.
Everything
I'm in agreement.
Everything you just said, bud. Everything that I was going to say would be what you just said.
Yeah. See, the thing is, this guy did compromise. You got a politician who does not go through the vetting process of compromising and selling out his soul. It's like, hey, let's get rid of this guy, move him over here, president gets shot, and now he is the president. And he didn't go through the compromises. He basically, you know, is a president who is true to his moral values, and his moral values are good.
But he's the last guy that I really honestly respect for what they were about. That's what most people say. Like, oh, I like kind of the
hardships that he experienced really are what formed his character. I mean, his mother and his wife died on the same day. You know, all the asthmatic problems and the things he had to overcome. I remember I wrote for a newspaper college, and I quoted him where he said that the Bible was worth more than a college education. You know, and he graduated Harvard. And, you know, people – so there are a lot of great things that he left, but I think it's important we understand what formed him into the man that he became, because he wasn't always that person, but there were the struggles that he had to face.
Absolutely. That's why I love this old history.
All right.
Talking about
right.
the good men.
I'm going to say this more. It's a plug for my book too, but I'm going to say, you know what made Roosevelt so great? Is he was not afraid of failure.
Right.
One of my favorite stories when I was writing my book, it's supposed to come out in April, go on Amazon. They were the Rough Riders, typing Kill Blaine. All right. But one of the stories, I mean, actually when I was giving lectures in Oklahoma as I was writing this book, people would ask me, what did the men think of Roosevelt? What did they think of him? And I'm going to reread the letters, and all of a sudden I realized they had no idea who he was until they met. So I assumed everybody knew who Roosevelt was. No, they didn't. Most people never knew who this guy was. So it changed the way I wrote. I had to go back, and I had to write my what now is my from the perspective that when they meet him on that Sunday after the first week, that's their first impression. And how most people are afraid to make mistakes in front of others. In other words, you can't learn unless you make a mistake. When I was a company commander, I told my lieutenants, I said, you learn by making mistakes. Like skiing. Always, if you want to get better skiing, ski two levels above your billet, which means you got to fall down. I said, get out there and make mistakes. You learn by mistakes, but don't make those mistakes we carry up, okay? And don't make the same mistake twice. So, and I'm telling you, the best lieutenant I had made some of the biggest, but I never judged my lieutenants on the mistakes they made, how they learned from them. Roosevelt had that attitude. There's a story in which, you know, like everybody walking around drilling, and he's standing out in front of everybody, and he's reading the drill manual. He puts his hands behind the manual, and he contemplates what he's doing. And then as if there was a whole battalion or regiment in front of him, he starts barking out commands. The people, like, looking at him. He was a comical figure that first week. But the thing was, he was not afraid to mistake in front of people because he had this real hot, what we call, you know, when I look at, I evaluate my subordinates, I look for that learning curve. I don't judge people. I didn't judge people on the mistakes they made. I judged them on how they recovered from it. Did they learn? Okay. That learning curve, because that's how I wanted people to learn. You know, I get out there and I want to make a lot of mistakes because I learn from it, and we move on. In Aikido, you know, I'm a martial arts instructor. Again, with Amanda, and we sit there and we go back and forth making mistakes, and we figure out what works. And that's what made Roosevelt such a great leader.
Absolutely. What do you train, by the way?
Well, like I say, I primarily for the last almost 11 years, I teach Aikido, but I have a boxing, wrestling, judo, and taekwondo background. And so
I'm able to
dig in.
I said, where's it located?
Well, I'm in the peninsula of Virginia. I live in Williamsburg, but my dojo is in Newport News. So unfortunately, unless you live in this area, I won't be able to coach you, okay? If you want to see what we're working on, type in Aikido Lee Boxing or my last name, Killblade, and you'll see two videos we have produced. And that will show you, you know, because there's a big debate that Aikido is a bullshit martial art that will not work against other martial arts. And because of my background, you know, I'm like, I know how this works. And so we've been working on it. The first video is me throwing panda around, and then the second one, because a lot of people said there's two things. One is Amanda was fast. Her hands are fast. She doesn't punch right, okay? So it's like, yeah, I can give you that. She doesn't punch, but she's fat. And they wanted to see someone at my skill level. People I was sharing the videos with really liked seeing Amanda throwing me around, you know, because I got 50 pounds on her in a 3-inch reach. So you think people seeing the smaller, weaker woman throw.
Okay. Did we lose him?
Yeah, I think he left.
Okay. He was getting cut off. That was something that he said. I'm wondering, James, if what we're talking about as far as good leadership and veterans, if this Roosevelt image doesn't fit into it. And perhaps, you know, we've been talking about the importance, you know, especially when you've had skin in the game. You know, you really understand something about laying your life down for your country. And I'm wondering if Roosevelt is a good model in our conversation as to what we're trying to encourage as regards other veterans getting involved in government.
Well, I personally believe, I mean, I could speak on behalf of veterans, but I mean, yeah. If you're willing to risk your life for it, I mean, how would Roosevelt be the best? He's the best dog to fight, or at least the best. He's a hero to us. He teaches us all those things.
Well, I mean, the other thing that's interesting when you study his life. You know, as Father Michael, you were saying about the asthma and, you know, if you read the history on him, he was a sickly child. That's exactly how they, described him. And, you know, he wore glasses and he was, you know, obviously, you know, in the bed a lot and it was because, and weak. And, you know, he had to, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the short person in a road march. They got to take two steps for every one step, you know, for the guy that's 6 foot tall or taller. And those troops always had a tendency be able to last much longer because they had to work themselves twice as hard. And I see Roosevelt as one of those folks. You know, his accomplishments at San Juan Hill, it wasn't just his bravery, but it was the fact that, you know, he was one of those leaders that said, follow me, and you literally were looking at his back, you know what I mean, because he was really in front of you and leading you. And that's the amazing part about it. Now, hopefully we can get Rich back on, but he has an interesting story about, you know, he was put in for the Medal of Honor for his actions on San Juan Hill. And this is where politics got involved. He upset, I think it was the Secretary of the Navy, and one of the last actions of this secretary was to deny him of his Medal of Honor. And it wasn't until the 1990s when they'd done the big review that he was posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor. And it just seems so small and so petty. But you know, he never complained about it. He never was, you know, sit around and whined about it, you know, because I'm sure that under President Eisenhower or some of the other great presidents, he probably could have got the Medal of Honor if he asked for it, you know what I mean? But he didn't. And so that shows a level of character and class. The other thing, obviously, he came up with a lot of different programs, you know, like our, you know, national forest. You know, he saw the importance of establishing the national forest system. And some people think that that may be a liberal thing or whatnot, but man, isn't it great to have it, you know? And we have it because of Teddy Roosevelt. So anyways, yeah, it's great. I'm glad that you called into the show, Buzzy. I really am. Mm-hmm.
When Rich started his book, this is years ago, I was one of the first ones to read some of his chapters. And this is many, many years ago. And he came into my office. And I'll tell you, as I was reading them, you almost felt like you were there. That's how descriptive. And it's just, I'm so happy that it's finally being published. And I hope that it can inspire us, you know, to be great people and men and women, you know, but to have the tenacity and the conviction and to know how to stand alone. You know, we usually use the model of the lion, you know, to kind of stand alone, because there's so much acquiescence in our culture. People cave, as you were saying earlier, James, and it's just pressure by other people. They don't know who they are. They're chameleons. They go along with whomever, you know, they don't want to offend. And you just really need a principle, a person that's principled, that's governed by principles and not by polls. And I think when you talk about veterans who have put their lives on the line and been badly injured and shot up like yourself and others that have lost limbs, I think that there's a little more seriousness about going to Washington other than, you know, trying to make money or serve themselves. I think they have a stake in the game. And so I don't think they're the only representatives, but I think there needs to be more of them, because we don't seem to have principled people. They seem to sway. And you have to have governing principles, like you were talking about the values we used to wear on our dog tags. And I taught that all the time. I taught ethics in the Army.
Well, the seven core values could change the way America functions, really, if everybody really lived by it. But I was on another radio show. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We learned that at high. Listen, I remember studying the Ten Commandments when I was in grade school. And, you know, we did the Pledge of Allegiance. We prayed. We did all of those things. We did that when I was in high school. I graduated in 1986, and we were still doing that. Now, I can remember it was a couple of years after that, that there was a kid that was an atheist and made a complaint about the prayer at graduation. And it was interesting to watch. So this would have been about 1988 or 89. And it was interesting to watch how that was handled. It wasn't blown off. I mean, they actually listened to what the kid had to say, and it actually made it in the news. It was just one of those things that that people were talking about. But ultimately, it came down to we're going to pray. Then they went into a silent prayer, and then eventually, I don't know. you know, some schools still pray over the intercom system, but they do it in a way where they say, take a moment of silence and pray, you know.
I pray
whatever
for the Army in public situations. Okay, I've prayed in front of Robert Gates a number of times, and I pray and I do a Trinitarian blessing because they asked a Christian priest to come. Because in my Harvard graduation, there was a Muslim imam, and he didn't pray a neutral prayer. He prayed his Islamic prayer. So when I get invited to something, and irrespective of what place it is, I'm going to pray in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and I'll pray a prayer, whatever it might be, commissioning, whatever. But I still do that all the time, public universities.
Interesting. That's what we should do. And, you know, again,
hey, let me put in a plug for Father Michael, okay?
Hey, there you go, man. We can hear you now,
yeah.
Rich. We hear you really good now.
All right. Now I've been listening to you guys. All right. So anyway, so Father Michael, he was raised Catholic, became Pentecostal to Charismatic Episcopalian Church. And but the thing is, he is so, I don't want to say neutral, but he's not polarizing, that he's actually been invited to the Greek Orthodox churches to teach. Is that correct, Father Michael?
It's been an invitation, but I haven't followed through. But I've been a judge.
But the point is,
they see you,
whereas like they would never invite anyone else. And here it is. They're going like, yeah, you know, you understand us. So you come in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I always refer to myself as non-denominational Christian. So while, you know, you actually have an affiliation, and I am a member of your church, while you may affiliate because you're to a structured church, I would see you as non-denominational, and that's why wherever you go to preach, that's where I fall. Okay, but yeah. Anyway, the thing is, we're getting into a point where that we pull God and values out of our schools.
Yep.
All because it offended an atheist. And there was one atheist, there's lots of atheists. And here's the real irony. Atheists don't believe in God. So why would it offend you that you don't believe there's a God, that a bunch of people are praying to a God you don't believe in would offend you? That just doesn't make any sense. Let people pray to whatever they want. If you don't believe, how in the world can and offend you? You should be laughing at it. But because it offended a minority of people, we took God out of our education process, and now the atheists are the majority.
When I was in the army, we have the problems we have.
We've never suicide among, you know, at rate we have today.
Mm-hmm.
You look at all the problems.
Yeah.
It's not related to a change in moral values.
Mm-hmm. I've never had a soldier refuse me to pray for them. I shared one time, my wife encouraged me to talk to this person who was going to Afghanistan. It was an Air Force doctor, go if it makes you feel better. But in the Army, Fort Bragg, all the places, I never had anyone. And as a matter of fact, I went out to the field recently, and I offered a prayer. I offered some, you know, edifying remarks. I brought them some candy. I did some counseling. There's a need, and we can't deprive everybody. If someone doesn't want to hear the prayer, you can step aside. You know, when I had my Harvard graduation, I respected the imam that was speaking, but I didn't bow my head and pray with him, okay? but I didn't show disrespect either. And so, you know, I just think we need to be a little more tolerant. But there's a great need for prayer. And like I said, I ask people all the time, can I pray for you? And especially in the Army, I never had anyone say, no, thank you. You know, and
let's address that. Why does the Army have chaplains? We have Muslim chaplains. We have Mormon chaplains. We have Christian chaplains. Mm-hmm. But it goes back to Washington. It goes back to Washington. Church and state is that we can't, the state support religion. But yet, the military has chaplains. Why do we have chaplains?
Well, the hero chaplains that James had on his Facebook, the hero chaplains that went down with the Dorchester were four of different faiths. I've been to the church in my hometown where they have a replica of the ship and all kinds of different stained glass. But like you said, the Constitution doesn't want one favored religion. But it doesn't mean that you don't need people with ethics and morals, especially if we're going to the Middle East, and you have to be informed on what these people believe and how they practice. You have to have subject matter experts. But I'll tell you, my office at Fort Bragg, my commander said to me, your office is like a barbershop, constant people. He gave me a bigger office. He gave me the former command and staff office. I had so many people coming. You know, I had over 700 in the battalion plus their families. And I also pastored a church on Ardennes. There is a need, and we can't deny that spiritual dimension. And there are many generals that have come out with different things of that nature. We can't deny the intangible. But, no, chaplains are very important. And you've had people that wanted to get rid of them and said, you know, our government's paying for religion. But they're paying for those that are represented. Okay, so if you have a lot of Catholics or a lot of Jewish, a lot of Muslims, then you have the number of chaplains that are a part of those you represent. That's why we always told the soldiers, don't say no affiliation. You know, say something, because then you'll get a chaplain. And so I never was without work, constant. And we weren't social workers. They came to you for spiritual guidance, for prayer, for counsel. And it was a full ministry. And today I'm still the chaplain for the two colleges. And I spoke at William & Mary yesterday to the group. And I was in the command and staff meeting today. I mean, there's a need for chaplains still, Terry, and in the culture.
Yeah, let's look at one of the most respected professions in America is the military. Congress is the least respected. Look at where the problems are. Since we took prayer and the Pledge of Allegiance out of the schools, schools have just turned into trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, we look at, you know, with the military, which is highly respected, there has to be a connection between that and a moral compass. Okay, Cortez talks about facts don't matter when you know you're morally right, and if there's not a common moral compass, then we are in serious trouble, because that's where you have people like Pol Pot, Stalin, or Hitler, which are able to say, I am the moral compass. And so we can execute all these people, and you have these genocides. But where we have, you know, one of the things that is common among most religions is this moral compass. You will find it's very similar. And so that is why it's important to have this moral compass. But Well, we've had
in the
happen.
School you'll be
yes.
teaching in this week, you'll be doing the Pledge of Allegiance and you'll be hearing prayers in the school. And you'll see a difference. Again, there's diversity and plurality. We respect that. They weren't giving us off anymore for Good Friday, and that's a high holy day for Christians, right before Pascha, Easter Sunday. And so I would take my group of people, and we would have service, and I would say to the commander, we're not coming back for formation because after service we're having fellowship. But I also made sure I got the proper meals for the Jewish soldiers, especially the Muslim soldiers, all kinds of accommodations that they couldn't wear, just the shorts. I remember my one commander saying, if they got to show modesty in this July heat at Fort Bragg, all the power to them, and they would sign off on it. And so, we have to be tolerant of each other, but to totally eradicate it, you're absolutely right. I was reading something about Richard Allen. I'm reading some Black history for Black History Month, and said that his slave owner, even though he wasn't a Christian himself, he encouraged them to go to church because he felt like they became better workers. They were moral. It was good for them, okay? And I think eventually he did convert himself. But I just think that it's really important, like you're saying, about the values and the ethics that we share. I've been sharing my thesis statement from my book, From Valor to Virtue, The Moral Development of the Brave. And I could tell, some of the students had never heard some of that moral philosophy. I use a lot of Aristotle, but it's kind of a precursor to introducing them to a intangible element of our lives that sometimes is neglected because we don't cultivate it. Like I said before, I wanted my children in church because that part of you lives forever, in the library because you need to have a strong mind, and in the gym because you have to work your body.
Well,
absolutely.
Let's address the argument between public school or giving the money to whatever school the parents want to send their kids to.
Mm-hmm.
Because on the left, the Democrats, they're like, we do not want to undermine public education. So we want to, where the Republicans are saying, let's get the money to where the parents want to send their schools.
Right.
So what school system is broken? The private schools? Now, when you think private schools, some people are going to think the elite schools. No, I would say most private schools are religious-based schools. But, mm-hmm. Joel, anybody going to disagree with me? The affordable private schools, not the elite schools, the affordable
mm-hmm.
private schools are Christian-based schools. So
and
public
the
schools or the private schools,
year.
Which ones are broken?
Those with no value.
Go ahead. Yeah. Well, not only no values, I would say those with no curriculum that's truly teaching an education that's based on anything more than the teacher's theory. There's a problem with that in the school systems, and not all school systems. We're very fortunate. We have a public school system here where I live, and our kids have all went there, and I graduated from a public school, and it was a great experience for me, and I learned a lot. But I had great teachers that mm-hmm. that taught subject matter, but they also demonstrated things like integrity, and
right.
honesty, and decency, and civility, discipline. They talked about things that mattered.
James, you're talking about schools that back when public schools taught values, they don't
mm-hmm.
teach values anymore.
Some do. Some
now
do.
Debating about critical race theory. We're not talking about values anymore.
Some do. Some
We're not talking about character development. You know, when I taught ethics in the Army, my West Point graduates and Notre Dame graduates had moral philosophy. Most of the post-baccalaureate students, I had to go in the library, I'm just telling you the truth, and get a workbook on a sixth grade level on character development. They hadn't learned it at home. They hadn't gone to church. They hadn't learned it in school. And so here I was teaching them who are ready to be officers in the United States Army, and they didn't have a real understanding of values and ethics internalized, not just in your mind. And it was a very big challenge. Me and Rich, you know, taught together there. I was still in uniform, and he wasn't. But I'm telling you, it was a great challenge to try to teach ethics to these people who had not been raised in an ethical home. And so I'm trying to navigate them through not ethical dilemmas, not hypotheticals, real stuff. It was very difficult. And like I said, the Notre Dame people had come prepared, and your West Point people came prepared, you know, but the majority of them, and it was embarrassing to say, but I'm telling you the truth. I went to the library there in the transportation school and got out a sixth grade workbook on character development.
Well, and you know, that's, you know, I mentioned that one time in a position that I have, in a national position that I have, that we have to teach on a level that's, I said, eighth grade or down. And and people thought that, you know, well, that's just crazy. And the reason why you have to do that is not, it's not because the people are ignorant and can't read, but because you're right. It's the subject matter. You know what I mean?
Content.
It's the subject matter, the content. You know, they don't understand that, you know, and I ran into that when I went to officer basic and even officer advanced course. You know, there were officers in there that their value system was very, very broken. They didn't have a problem of me first, I'm in front of the line, and and I can remember having discussions with several of them. As a matter of fact, a couple of my instructors are on Facebook. You know, one of them is Captain Lee and SFC Marshall, and both of those gentlemen I have since retired from the Army, but they could tell you, you know, they remembered me from the class, you know, telling people this, like, you know, when you become an officer, when you become a leader, you know, you have to set the example. You have to be the one that's demonstrating integrity and honesty and decency and courage.
And moral courage, too, though.
Yes.
Things, not just physical courage.
You absolutely, know, so yeah.
I talked to a Green Beret recently, and he said, I've seen people, this guy's highly decorated, I've seen people cower, he says, but I have more of a repugnancy for those who won't stand up for what's right. He read my book, by the way. The moral courage sometimes is even more important than the physical courage.
No, I would agree with you 100%. And that's what, you know, this whole, you know, the last almost 2 hours. I'm really glad that the gentleman called in. And his actual name is Rick. And Rick called in and, you know, wanted to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Great. You know what? You know what? We should probably do that before every show. Just because, you know, it's part, and we should pray. We should close out every single one of these radio shows with a prayer.
Yeah, but the pledge, right now, most people, it's just words. They don't know the meaning of the words. That's what I was really hoping. I wanted to hear what the meaning of those words. I pledge allegiance. What does that mean?
Break it down. Break it down for us, Rich. Give us a class on it.
Well, actually, Kella is the educated guy. He's got it right now.
Go ahead.
What do you mean by pledge allegiance?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when we all took our oaths, though, it was to God and country. But we have to have an allegiance, you know, even though we have double citizenship in heaven and here. In the book of Jeremiah, it talks about caring for the city because in its welfare is your welfare. Mm-hmm. You know, so we do pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic.
What does that mean? So if I pledge an allegiance, what does that require
that
of me?
Well, to serve, I personally believe everybody should go into the military. I personally believe that even if you go to the Peace Corps, I believe mm-hmm. that there has to be some service that you mm-hmm. Give back to your country.
All right, so it's a loyalty. So we're going to look
yes.
at the lead like in the loyalty. And mm-hmm. here's the thing, to the flag, not
yep.
to the leader, not to the Fuhrer. All right,
mm-hmm.
in World War II, you know, everybody was
mm-hmm.
Sieg Heil, and they were to the
yeah.
Fuhrer. They were loyal to the Fuhrer, a person. No,
mm-hmm.
we are to the flag. And now, here's the thing. We have we've got in the left, they're all against flags, unless it's a rainbow-colored flag. They're all against
yeah.
flags because flags lead to war. The thing is, the flag represents to us. The flag represents a country. It represents
right.
the Constitution. It doesn't represent a leader,
mm-hmm.
a president. We are not,
every
you know,
state.
Okay. So, all right. For the Republicans, they look at if you vote for a Democrat, you're voting for Nancy Pelosi. For the left, the Democrats, if you vote for a Republican, you're voting for Donald Trump. It's about personality leadership. I pledge allegiance to the flag, not to an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what the flag represents, you know, there's the 50 stars, you know what I'm saying, and everything that it stands for. And you could probably speak to this better, both you and James, even about our own flags in each of our companies. Or a flag
mm-hmm.
from
right.
our battalion.
No, that,
you know?
That, no, I'm good. Yeah, you nailed it because in the infantry,
mm-hmm.
okay, as
yeah.
As a historian, what I found is transporters are in love with equipment. But when you're in the infantry, love weapons, but you're loyal to the flag, the guide on.
Mm-hmm.
The guide on represents your unit. And
mm-hmm.
and here's the thing is Alpha Company 2-9, the company there are 2-9 reunions, but the men of Alpha Company don't go to those, but they joke about it. It's all the officers going to it because my men hold their own reunion. And when I went to my first Alpha Company reunion, I'm the first officer to go to it. And I looked up and the guy that hosted it, there's a copy of up there, or guide on.
Mm.
For us,
and after you were
serve,
a company commander,
we serve the flag.
And when you were a company commander, didn't they give you a flag after your command was over?
All right. But I tell you, I'm glad you asked that. Only, all right, yes, I have a copy of my guide on. And underneath
mm-hmm.
the full flag, it says, from the mm-hmm. officers about the infantry. It's not automatic. If you do a good job, you know, I warned officers, I was teaching lieutenants, you know, when you get to command, you know what you're working for? You're working for that day when, the 2 days. One is when at the end of your command, they're going to hand you a copy and it's going to have a little plaque from the officer's men. If they do not like you, they're not going to contribute money to buy it. Expensive. Second thing is, you're going to want to lead your men in a way that you're looking forward to the all equal.
I got an iron mic, by the way. I got an iron mic when I left Fort Bragg, and I that was something very special to me. I mean, of course, I was the chaplain.
Yeah,
Lieutenant
so
chaplain,
what
but...
you're special because you as a chaplain are supposed to be
mm-hmm.
above all this stuff. No, you were sharing the burden of the other guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've proven that you're just like everybody else, right? Yeah,
yep.
That was all that. Okay, but anyway, back to the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag and to the republic.
Yes.
Are we a democracy or are we a republic?
Republic.
Or a constitutional republic, yes.
Yes, that's
what
right.
is it? Define that. Because right now
well,
we
constitutional
think...
Well, a constitutional
no, we think
republic
everybody
means...
thinks we're a democracy. We're not a democracy.
No,
well,
the founding fathers saw us as
a republic.
What is a republic?
Athens, where you had the majority of people who voted so that Socrates would drink the hemlock. That's a true democracy. We are a constitutional republic. That's right.
Yeah, we elect representatives.
Where you elect people
that's right.
to vote the, who lead you. The problem mm-hmm. is, you want to know the most perfect form of democracy is go look at Native Americans. See, a pure form of democracy is I only have to do what I want to do, and I vote for people I want to do. I love this site, the Battle of the Hayfield Fight, and it was Bozeman Trail. And so what you had is the Indians had decided they're going to wipe out these two forts, okay, on the Bozeman Trail because the Army had not properly negotiated a treaty to establish the fort. So they're going, but they couldn't agree on which fort they were going to wipe out first. So the ones that voted for one fort decided to wipe out that fort. The ones that voted to wipe out the went, that's true democracy. You did what you wanted to do. In a republic, the republic you had voted who said, we're going to focus on this one. And what happened is because he attacked two different forts, they lost. All right. And I worked with a Native American, you know, in growing up in Oklahoma. And I'm going to tell you, probably the most dysfunctional government there is because it's a pure democracy. A republic is vote. We elect. Elect leaders to make laws for us. Okay. And so to the Republic.
One nation.
Under
unity.
God. One nation.
Yes, right.
Actually, believe it or not, the under God part was added.
Yeah, I said that earlier by 50. President Eisenhower. When I was born in January 54, it wasn't on there yet.
That's right.
But
that's right.
Yes.
One nation. All right, one nation under God part was added later. So what does it mean by saying one nation?
Yeah, I mean, the whole unity that we experienced when we experienced the disunity in the Civil War, we're one nation. You know,
Hey, I'm going to tell you right now, the politics of today is not one nation. It
You're
is
right.
not about one nation. It is about my
yeah.
way. Everything is political.
Well,
it is. There's no compromise anymore. There's no one nation.
Unfortunately.
We get elected
yeah.
as a day. We want our way. We
get unfortunately,
Rich.
The Republicans, we want our way.
Unfortunately,
I know we're running out of time. But
yeah, we're down to the last.
Indivisible, right.
Yeah.
The word indivisible, James, we've got to understand. We could even understand the Holy Trinity that way.
Oh, you said indivisible.
Indivisible.
There's no more divisiveness to that. The...
Go ahead, Father Michael.
61.
Yeah, that to me is the most important word, indivisible. You know,
right.
certainly, you know, we talk about, you know, justice for all. So it certainly is. When I was in martial arts, you know, we used to talk about a certain creed and chastity, and I don't mm-hmm. think most people lived up to it, or like, you know, the Boy Scout creed. And I think that we need to live up to the pledge. So maybe we need to say
right.
it, James, and we need to elaborate
yeah.
on it and say a prayer. If they're not doing it in school, maybe we can do it.
Yeah, and speaking of that, let's go ahead and say a prayer. We've got a minute and a half left, so
okay.
take us out in prayer,
okay.
Father Michael.
In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, amen. We just thank you, Lord, that you love us, that you've given us such a wonderful country. Help us to be good citizens, Lord God. Help us to be good Christians, obeying your law first. I pray a blessing upon everyone who's listening. And I just pray, Lord, that you'll raise up righteous men and women to lead our country. For I pray in Jesus' name, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen.
Amen. Amen.
And as we get ready to close out this show, I think this was a very good show. I enjoyed getting the caller. You know, we've had callers on before. This caller that called in actually brought in some pretty good content, and I enjoyed having him on the show, and I hope that he calls again later because, you know, we need that. We need American citizens calling in and discussing these things, not arguing, but discussing,
right.
And everything that he brought to the table tonight was pretty good stuff. I mean, it was pretty good stuff. So for all the listeners out there, thank you for listening in to Continue Mission. We are so thankful to have you on here. And we say to each and every one of you, good night. God bless you. And we look forward to catching you again next Friday on Continue Mission. Be sure to listen. Good night, everyone. Have a great weekend.
Good night, James and Rich.
Good night.